Good morning, one and all, and welcome back to Fridays at the Damage Report with me, John Iderola, and a slightly vaguely anthropomorphic garbage can, and Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
I was an anthropomorphic major in college. I tried everything. I don't know if no one can see it. Anyways, don't worry. Right. I had a whole funny bit that I forgot about until we were about to start, and it just didn't work out the way I wanted to. So I apologize to everyone for not just like being super hilarious right now. I really let everyone down.
And yeah, like next week, you could have just said hi, John, and then I would have rolled on. Like I think you expect the expectations for you a bit high.
Let's just say the following has happened right before shows on this network when anyone makes the mistake of asking me to be on them. So just now, I tried to pull off a bit, could have just gone normal, but it kind of made me stumble. So now I'm flailing and trying to, I could have kept it together. You're right. But instead I'm overcorrecting. I sat in for Dr. Richie.
Yeah.
The beginning of the week, which feels like 2 and 3 weeks ago. And his opening credit song is this trap beat that makes you want to dab. And when I dabbed, I got my hand caught in my headphones and pulled my microphone out, unplugged the thing it plugs into. And it was like dangling off the side of my desk. And I couldn't hear or really, I couldn't tell if I was hearable to anyone. It was just horrible. So I'm just a different person this week than I normally am. But John, I'm gonna try to get back in the saddle and ride off into the sunset with you and the Dragon Squad today. Because it's Friday, damn it.
I'm glad about that. But let's just have fun. You feel like you're bearing this great burden. Set it down. It'll be easier to get up on the salad once you set down this burden. But anyway, yes,
salad instead of saddle, and it might be my favorite thing, my favorite image. You can get back up on the salad whenever you want.
It's soft. Crawl up onto it. Anyway, okay, what brief final thought do you have? What?
Brief final thought. Tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, John Iderola will be in the common room. I'll be in the common room. What?
Right, we'll see how this goes.
Adriana Vega will be in the common room, and Luke Null from season 44, I think, of Saturday Night Live will be in the common room, and we will be answering such questions as at what point in your life did you realize your parents were just as stupid as you were? That's one of Luke's questions, and we'll answer it today. So join us at twitch.tv/TYT at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern tonight.
Yes. Very exciting. Well, we've got a lot to get to on this program as well. So thank you everyone for joining us. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already. And as we go through the next 90 minutes of news, we'll be taking some breaks, responding to your comments, tweets, super chats, all of that. So feel free to send those in. Early heads up, let you know a few things that are happening later on today. First of all, on Twitch, Galaxy Brain with Ben Crollo, who joined me on the program yesterday. That'll be going live at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time. And then inconveniently at the exact same time at youtube.com/TYT Sports, Ricky Strom will be going live with sports and gaming and politics and other things. So you can open up two tabs, or you can choose, but choose wisely. Galaxy Brain and TYT Sports taking up your afternoon today. So anyway, with that, Brett, why don't we jump into the news?
Sure.
I think that was as brief and as smooth as nice. Some of the early census results are now in, and we've been wondering what is going to happen. I mean, we only get one of these every decade, and they're incredibly significant, not only for giving us information about how America is changing and shifting as the years go by, but of course, very soon, the information we'll be discussing here is going to be translated into gains and losses in political power, in states and in the federal government. So we're going to talk about both aspects of that, the change and some of what we think we know about how it might affect politics. Let's start off with some of the top level analysis. Overall population growth slowed dramatically over the past decade. The growth that did occur, an increase of about 23 million people, which still sounds like a lot of growth, was made up entirely of people who identified themselves as Hispanic, Asian, Black, or more than one race, according to the data, the first racial and ethnic breakdown from the 2020 census. So let's talk about how each of some of these groups has changed over time. The white population in the United States, for the first time on record, declined over the course of the decade. And what's interesting is that if you compare, still number one as a group, but if you take a look at the results we believe we have for now, and then go back 10 years and go back 20 years, what effectively has happened is back 20 years ago, non-Hispanic white respondents made up 69.1% of the population. 10 years later, that had dropped 5.5 points. 10 years after that, it's dropped about another 5 points. So about 10 points in 20 years. So that's a significant difference. Over the same period, the black population grew by about 6%, an increase that represented about a tenth of the overall growth. So what's interesting is that it's as a percentage of the population. If you look at the overall percentage of the US population that identifies as black, it has been fairly consistent at 12% over the past 20 years. So in any event, the racial makeup of the country changing quite a bit. Those identifying as Hispanic has grown to almost 20% in the most recent numbers. And interestingly, Asian respondents have grown from just 3.6% of the population 20 years ago to 5.9% of the population in the most recent data, which is still a small segment of the US population, but it's a very significant amount of growth for the population, nearly doubling in just 20 years. So Brett, initially, what do you think about this?
I love when the census comes out because it's just a lot of weird feelings and you're looking around at all people's reactions, which are either like kind of racist or at the very least like identity politics relishing or ruining. Like that is my favorite part of it, where like all the headlines in the wake of this are, it's really good news for Democrats. And just implicit in that is a whole bunch of things that you kind of have to do in the wake of a census. The census is what drives redistricting. It happens every 10 years. And then the other aspect of it, it's the census plus whoever's in charge of every state at the time. from a party perspective, either breaking down or strengthening their gerrymandered hold on a state. And so it's fascinating. It's weird. I will say, like, I'm just like, when I see fewer white people, for some reason, there's like a part of me that's like, I guess that's my team. All right, do I feel bad because we're losing, or do I feel good because we're like all winning together to have a more diverse thing? But I can't, like, there's something about a census that gives you a score where I feel like I have to either, I'm either winning or losing in some way, and I don't know how to translate that. I'm just like yeah, Lakers in the news, gotta have the Lakers win. I'm white. What are the white people doing, I guess? But like, I'm Jewish white. Yeah. Do they even like me? Like, what is that?
I get the urge. It's just a reflection. This is gonna be one of the weirdest analogies, but I spent a lot of time on Reddit. And it's very common on some subreddits to like celebrate when they reach certain levels of like, hey, we've got 10,000 people or we've got 100,000. And I always felt like, well, what does that mean really? Like it's just, yeah, it's growing, I guess. But like, why are you making such a big, I never understood it. But anyway, what I worry is that you're gonna see a whole bunch of that coming up in a negative direction. So when you see that the non-Hispanic white population has dropped below 60%, I don't know how Fox is going to respond to that in the short term or in the long term. I think the increased diversity is an obvious good. I think that the backlash from conservative whites is going to be multi-threaded and devastating. So I am worried about that. That's one of the things that I immediately thought when I saw these results, Brett.
And it'll be on multiple fronts. It'll be like explicit from some, and then a lot of folks will just like sit and stew in it. Like, oh
yeah.
And that's I think that's the nature of racism in America. Like there are going to be people who are racist, and within that population, there's going to be people who are overtly racist who are going to say this and see this and be like, this happened. Can you believe it? We're losing. We got to win. And then there's going to be other people who don't say that out loud, but then every turn when they encounter something, they'll think about this. They'll be at a Marshall's and they'll look. I mean, because I'm seeing all these Karen videos, they'll be at a Marshall's and they'll look at someone who like may have gotten a shirt before the person themselves got a shirt, and suddenly this will be the front on which the race war plays out.
Yeah,
because it's just implicitly there. It's another thing where, you know, in a world where it's racial, it's socioeconomic, it's political, all the reasons you may be winning or losing in your mind and in reality, this census data gives a lot of opportunists the opportunity to make it racial. And that's what you'll see moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I definitely think so. And I mean, like Tucker Carlson has been talking nonstop about the great replacement theory.
Yeah.
Before this data came out, like if you don't think he's gonna pick it up and run really awkwardly with it, then yeah, you haven't been watching Fox News. Now that said, let's turn to some of the political implications. As the census data is coming in, it is clear that some areas are growing faster than others, both because of immigration from outside of the United States, but also populations inside of the United States moving from one area to another. So let's talk about some of the ways that that's manifesting. So first of all, Philadelphia is now the sixth largest city in the US. It has been bumped from fifth by Phoenix, which was the fastest growing of the top 20 largest cities. Its population rose by 11.2% in just this last decade. So Phoenix has been growing very fast, but not the fastest. That goes to The Villages, a retirement community in Florida, the fastest growing metropolitan area in the entire country. And look, I'm gonna say, I don't know a lot about The Villages aside from, you know, when it occasionally pops up in the news, but that doesn't seem immediately like great news. I don't know, Brett, is that irrational to think that that Florida getting bigger in any way is probably gonna have negative consequences for America?
I mean, it's a physical aggregator of an aging population. The Villages is like a large scale retirement community for all intents and purposes. It's my ideal retirement community just because they have golf carts. And there could be lions roaming free on the streets, and I'd still be happy about it because I'd be able to drive a golf cart everywhere. There's something fun about that. But that is, I think that's the big takeaway. If we're talking census, if we're talking demographics, it is a place. Like the main challenge, I don't know if you're gonna get to this, but the main challenge is an urbanizing population. So people are moving from rural areas to urban. And when you say urban, there's a lot of places where that's a code word for just like racially diverse, but I literally just mean in this situation,
a city.
Like a city. People are moving to cities, which if you think the districts are gerrymandered and weird looking now, just wait a second, because it's all gonna be like a giant city that's this big, and they're either going to draw rings around it so that all the suburban areas outside are one district, or it's gonna be like bicycle spokes. It's gonna be the center city with a tiny little area that pokes in for a certain group, and it might come in like a finger and then just go out into rural sprawling areas radially, like pieces of a pie. That's what's gonna be what they look like. So you're still gonna have wildly gerrymandered districts, and you're gonna see them look crazier and crazier in these specific states that a lot of us conceive to be purple, where they've been able to do it on a state level where the state legislature is disproportionately represented by Republicans when compared to like the overall popular vote. And they're just gonna make it weirder and weirder because they're in charge of drawing these lines, and there is no federal mechanism or like universal mechanism state by state that will allow people to check these for partisan gerrymandering, period.
Yeah, now there could be. We could pass the For the People Act. The Democrats have it entirely within their power to do that, but it's probably not gonna happen, and so you're right. Yeah, and I was thinking about this recently. How crazy is it? I know that there's a lot about American democracy that's crazy, but we had a time, go back just a few years, and the Republicans were fairly overrepresented already in terms of they're only so popular, they have more power. So since then, they lost the House, they lost the presidency, they lost the Senate. And after all of that losing, they're gonna be even more overrepresented than they were before. So somehow Democrats overcoming all of these hurdles and gaining political power in some ways can't, and in other ways, as we were just alluding to, won't stop a continued like accumulation of political power in an increasingly unpopular minority party.
But that's great.
Unfortunate in our country.
I mean, it's just like greenhouse effect. Like that's what's crazy about it.
Is it?
It intensifies, it's bad, and then it just intensifies because, you know, the same way that like greenhouse gases trap heat and we keep creating heat, it compounds on itself.
That's true.
The insulating factor of gerrymandering and disproportionate representation in those states makes it worse and worse.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Well,
it is fascinating. And as I've been saying, we also want to get an idea of how this is going to translate into political power. And so thankfully, Brett and I are experts on that. No, we're not. I don't know. I'm just going to be looking to those who apparently are for whatever reason. So some of the people who either have it as their official job or have a reputation of most of the time getting some things right, grains of salt all over the place, have responded to the census data saying things like this. So Dave Wasserman said, early read, based on the strong urban and weaker rural numbers I'm seeing, this is a much more favorable census count than minority advocacy groups and Dems had feared. He went on to say Democrats have reason to be happy. He cited the higher than expected population tallies in New York and Chicago and the steady growth of the nation's Hispanic population. So what that's a reference to is something that if you've been watching the show for a long time, you know we've done like 50 videos about this over the past few years. Many Democrats had feared that Latino and urban voters would be badly undercounted amid the coronavirus pandemic and the Trump administration's effort to ask about citizenship status. So there were a lot of reasons over the past few years to think that some populations might be significantly undercounted. It is still entirely possible that that has happened, whether it's Hispanic voters or young voters or voters in particular cities. But so far, the results don't scream out that that is likely what happened. And to focus on just a couple areas, Georgia is just 50.1% non-Hispanic white now. That has been dropping. It could be majority minority, you know, since a lot of these results are coming from more than a year ago. So in terms of the Democrats' odds of maintaining those Senate seats, that's going to help them by a couple percentage points. So in terms of some of this early stuff, Brett, what do you think?
I mean, the way the census handles Hispanic as a term, as a concept, is one of the most fascinating things about the census, which itself is very boring and very tedious. Other, you know, ethnicities, races, or whatever, as they boil down to white, Hispanic, Black, Asian, those are very cut and dry. But as people hear, like non-Hispanic white, I don't know about this last one, but traditionally it's been like Hispanic, Hispanic Black, Hispanic White, but it's not. It's different from white, Black, Asian. It's kind of this weird floating category. So that's one aspect of it that I think is just very interesting. It's like, why is this race different from all others? That's one part of it. The Black group, I just want to say, staying at the same percentage of the population, I just want to call out like, oh, dear Republicans, I thought the whole thing was they were having a bunch of kids so they could get on welfare. So really, there should be a larger percentage of the population based on how you have characterized Black people in America going back decades and decades, if not centuries and centuries, essentially.
Yeah.
That's another thing. But the census is very strange. It's so important because it's how we draw up lines for representation. And then it's so boring, because it's just counting a lot of people. But
I know, and obviously that makes it a risky A block, like starting off the census, but I find it fascinating and it is super important. Like the stakes were super important. We did a lot of talking about it, as I said, and we are going to see what happens. I hope that talk about all this puts more pressure on the Democrats to pass the For the People Act. It probably will not come to pass, but obviously a lot is riding on this.
And the last part about the Hispanic population as it relates to electoral politics is you turn on any big news station and they will say the Hispanic population translates to votes for Democrats, which is just not as true as they want you to believe it is for various reasons. One, there's it's not like a uniform chunk of people.
In any way, yeah.
They all speak the same language, but does that put Americans on the same, you know, are we the same as people from Belize because they speak English there? Like, is that, would you equate those two? Or are they Latin Americans? Like, that's a big question mark. But that's how people lump them together. But you have a lot of differing circumstances, largely due to the nature of American interventionism and how people feel about Republicans and Democrats. You got Cubans, you got people who are fleeing certain countries that either America set up or has tried to set up the governments of and failed. So it's not a uniform block. And then there's differing opinions on immigration as a key voter issue based on whether you want more or don't want more, because your family either got through and you don't want others to get through, or you went through the, you know, people are like, I went by the rules. This is similar to how people feel about college debt forgiveness.
Agreed. Okay, we'll be talking more about it in the future. For now though, we do have to take our first break, so we'll be back in just a sec. Anyway, before we jump into the news, of which we have a lot, a few things I want to remind you of. First of all, I will be, oh, interesting. So I'm going to be on the power panel. Yeah. Is this accurate? It's Adrian and Michael still, right? Right, Brett?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this hasn't been updated. Anyway, Michael Shore and Adrian Lawrence will both be there. We're going to be doing the first hour. JR will be taking over. And Brett, who will he be joined by?
JR will be joined by Francesca and Nando.
That sounds awesome. Definitely tune in, enjoy that. Now, today, if you want to watch that power panel, you can watch it at youtube.com/thedamagereport. But this will be the last day of what is called the multicast. Starting on Monday, to watch the Young Turks live stream, which you freely can, you don't need to be a member of anything, a subscriber of anything, anything like that, you will have to go to youtube.com/theyoungturks. So just bear that in mind for the start of next week. And as always, after our program is over and before all that awesome content we talked about earlier, Indisputable will be coming up. You will have Dr. Rashad Ritchie. He might dab and destroy his audio equipment, but it's going to be an awesome show. So that's coming up in just a little bit. Now with that, I was going to say who the co-host was, but I don't think this document's been updated. So I'm a little bit worried about Brett. Who is
Waz?
Oh, it is Waz. Okay.
There's a last minute cancellation. It's Waz again today.
Awesome. Great. Always good to have Wazzy on there. Okay, with that, why don't we jump into the news? Matt Gaetz is out there just waiting, as we all are, to find out what the investigators have been able to get from Joel Greenberg. Well, we have gotten a little bit more information now. It isn't much necessarily in the grand scheme of things, but it certainly doesn't look good for him, although it could be worse. So let's get into a little bit of what Joel Greenberg, who has previously been described by Matt Gaetz as his wingman, had to say. So he's apparently given prosecutors years worth of electronic cash transactions and thousands of pictures and videos as part of a broad sex trafficking probe. That's a lot of pictures and videos. Google voice messages from back in September of 2018 reveal how Greenberg met online with women for him and Gaetz to meet in person. Greenberg allegedly discussed payment options with one woman who was of legal age and asked if she would take drugs before setting up a meeting between himself, Gaetz, the woman, and one of her friends. So let's go into a few of these text messages. Joel Greenberg said, I have a friend flying in and we are trying to make plans for tonight. What are your plans for later? And how much of an allowance will you be requiring? Smiley face. This is getting awkward. The woman responded by telling Greenberg she has, quote, a friend who introduced me to the website that I could bring and said she usually requires $400 per meet. Greenberg told the woman that Gaetz was down here only for the day. He continued, we work hard and play hard. He then asked her if she had ever tried MDMA. He provided no citations for the working hard portion of that assertion, but whatever. Anyway, as Greenberg was discussing payment for the get together, the woman asked if Gaetz used the same website Greenberg had used to beat her. Greenberg replied in part, he knows the deal, smiley face. Greenberg then said he would book a suite downtown for the gathering. So Brett, what we see there is communications by Greenberg, not by Gaetz. And while obviously what they're trying to set up is illegal, it isn't involving a woman who is younger than 18. So it's hardly good news for Matt Gaetz, but so far this really does seem like it could have been worse for him.
It seems like it could have been worse.
Well, they could have been talking about a woman that they know is 16 or something.
There was a time when, as a small government Republican, you'd get in a scandal if your best friend was a tax collector. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're missing this. Like Joel Greenberg is a tax collector. Just all the tiny details about this reveal what a fake ass Matt Gaetz is. His best role boy that he wants to turn into like some big congressperson, he thinks would be good for Congress, is setting up illegal interactions with illegal drugs. Mm-hmm. Hashtag rule of law.
Yeah.
This is role boy. So I'm at the one point, it is useless to point out hypocrisy, but I think it's helpful to identify who's a fake ass. And Matt Gaetz is a huge, weird brown suit wearing fake ass.
I hope he's on the Wikipedia page for fake ass. I really
he is. He's just such a fake ass. And so all these things that, as Tucker Carlson nightly clutches pearls, and Laura Ingraham, what kind of an example is this? Oh, and brown suit, tan suit from our dear friend, you know, Barack Obama. Like, how dare it happen? Matt Gaetz and his tax collector role boy are embroiled in an investigation where we know they refer to the payment for sex as a quote allowance.
An allowance.
Which is so daddy creepy.
It could have been, Lacey didn't say like, you know, for ice cream money. Like that's about it, the only thing that could
braces.
Oh, yeah. So look, you're right. You are right. And what's wrong with me? Like, okay, so they're doing illegal drugs. They're, you know, like they're paying prostitutes. That's it. Yes, I am broken. Okay, now of course, look, the undercurrent that we have always woven into every one of these stories is I don't think MDMA should be illegal. I don't think that prostitution should be illegal. It should be regulated, obviously, to protect the predominantly women that engage in it. But that said, these are not Matt Gaetz's positions, at least not stated. Now, if they were, we might have a different story, aside from the stuff with raping girls that he's alleged to have done. If he was saying, look, yes, everything that you've seen so far is true. I did frequent the services of a prostitute. I did do MDMA. I believe all of it should be legal. And if you want to send me to jail, I will go as a political prisoner because I believe it's important that these things get legalized, taken out of the shadows so that the people engaged in them could be protected. But he's nowhere near that. And so we come off of Cuomo rightly resigns for all the things he's done. Matt Gaetz. He's probably not even gonna be asked questions about this most recent date. Isn't it a weird set of double standards? They should both be out of government for the rest of their lives.
I've been a very staunch proponent of double standards because having more of anything is good. So twice as many standards, why not?
That's true.
I'm for as many standards as possible, especially when they benefit me personally and hurt my opponent in the long run. I just don't see
even if just in a petty way.
But there's a very real aspect of that is just setting expectations. And it really comes down to this. We don't wear like tuxedo, you know, we don't wear three-piece suits to walk to the grocery store anymore.
Yeah.
There's a certain aspect, there's a certain expectation of politicians that's archaic at this point. It's out of date. For a lot of us, that the politicians, when they do speak like politicians to us, that is just, it sounded okay because they were all talking like that. When you would hear, it used to be when you listen to an investigation, like if you're watching the investigation or the hearing for Clarence Thomas, and an era where all the politicians are talking the same way, and all of the lawyers are talking the same way, all the witnesses are talking the same way, where you absorb it and you're like, this is how everyone talks. It's like when you're watching like a Shakespeare play. It's not weird because they're all talking like Shakespeare in this outdated way. Now in politics, there's Shakespearean actors, and then there's like Mamet people, like or just they're not even affect. There's just people who are saying, "Yo, what's up, Tybalt? Why you gotta stab that guy?" You know, that's what it's like.
And we've reached peak Shakespeare here.
But that dissonance. But that dissonance for a handful of people, for a substantial portion of at least the Republican viewing audience is refreshed by that. And that won because as the media itself evolves, as the society itself, if it doesn't evolve, it at least progresses and finds new iterations of itself. Folks have, you know, you kind of exposed, like, it's like when Austin Powers exposed that James Bond was getting ridiculous. And now you can't look at James Bond the same way. You have a lot of people like Trump who are out there on stage with 17 other Republicans and just make fun of them for talking like weird politicians. And that resonated. And Matt Gaetz is trying to capitalize on that. He's adjusted expectations. So when you find out that he's been like accused of allegedly trafficking underage girls, he's brought your expectations down so far that it isn't as weird as something in you believes it should be.
Yes. Yeah, and buttressed by things like the fact that their base has been trained to believe that all of these accusations are always made up, except when it's on the other side, then it's totally legit. And to think that it's cool in some way, like they, sure, they want it to be illegal for other people, but they kind of think that it's cool when like one of their people gets away with it. But yeah, you are totally right. So we'll see if any of it catches up to him. People in the chat were like, John, don't give him ideas. But like in my idea, he's in jail. So isn't that something? I don't know. Anyway, with that, let's move on to one of the most ridiculous stories that I've seen in a long time. We're gonna launch right into this video.
Bill, but some of the crazy things in it, let's plant flowers on the side of the road. Let's study impact collisions between animals and humans on the road. What about the windmills? The windmills kill so many birds and yet they're taking us toward the Green New Deal.
Yeah, well, and another part of that Green Deal is the huge solar farm that they have out on the border of California and Nevada, thousands of acres of concave mirrors that magnify the sun toward three towers, heat up the liquid in there and turn turbines. But they weren't anticipating that there would be hundreds and thousands of what they would call flamers. Because when the birds fly through, if they survive the windmills, then they hit that magnified sun, explode in flame, and down they go, bird guts all over the mirror. So that takes some cleaning up. This is the green stuff that's just out of control.
That got weird at the end. I don't know why the guts there. But anyway, this is the green stuff. I don't know if he's still talking about the guts, or if he's being even more dismissive of the Green New Deal than Nancy Pelosi famously was. But anyway, that is Louie Gohmert one-upping that straight-faced OAN reporter with her flowers on the side of the road in talking about the flamers. The fact that you say you want renewable energy, clean energy, but clean energy is mass bird murder. If you even believe that birds are real. So here is the most surprising thing. No, Brett. You can respond. I'm gonna tell you what I was shocked to find out. But first, what's your reaction to the flamers comment?
I love it. Louie Gohmert's like, there's birds on fire. Their guts getting all over my solar farms.
They like, got another one.
What's your complaint? Like for all the time when they're like, I can't believe the tiger shrimp are the reason we can't put this dam here and flood a town. They're like, now they're like, save the flamers. Save the birds. I don't want to have to clean up that mess. At the same breath, she's like, they care about, I can't believe they care about like roadkill. And then they're like, how dare there be hot birds, hot wings everywhere. Hashtag hot wings for all. Like, what's your complaint? Like, what are you mad?
It's very convenient. Doubt they care. About the dead birds. But here is the most shocking thing you will hear on this episode of season one of The Damage Report, or possibly any other episode in this season. Everything Louie Gohmert said there, not everything, most of what he said there is true.
Yeah.
I was shocked to find out. There are some gaps there and some issues we'll get into, but a 2014 report by CBS looked at a solar facility in California's Mojave Desert where roughly 6,000 birds die each year. The report cited a federal investigation of three Southern California solar facilities that they said act as a mega trap, attracting insects, which in turn attract insect eating birds, which are then incapacitated. No word on why the insects don't turn into flamers. And anyway, in this report, the birds were referred to as streamers, which is, and I did research, the closest I was able to find in any of this to Flamers. So I don't know where the Flamers come from. I don't know if he'd recently eaten at Kenny Rogers Roasters. I don't know. But anyway,
John, you know, a Republican,
he's stupid,
congressperson using that word.
No,
I feel like
it can't just be.
So my listen, my dad, there used to be this electronic store called The Good Guys, and my dad would be like, the two guys, we have the two guys, can we go to the two, is it the two guys, is it the best two? Like, you kind of mix things that are kind of floating around in your mind if you can't exactly remember it. And so he couldn't remember streamers. So he dropped another word that sounded like it that was already in his vocab, if you know what I mean.
I get what you're saying. No word yet on who his favorite Twitch flamers are. We've got some coming up later on TYT, actually. Anyway, so look, that was the 6,000. According to a study from back in 2016, roughly 140,000 birds die annually in the United States because of solar power plants. So there's a lot of streamers out there, a lot of flamers. Here's the thing. Everything he said other than the flamers thing is true. And even more surprising, references actual studies, which I don't think he's ever done before. However, this is an instance of where technically telling the truth actually takes you a long way away from the truth. Because while yes, these birds do die from solar plants, that does not mean we shouldn't have solar plants, or that solar plants are worse than the alternative, which they are not. In 2006, fossil fuel plants caused the deaths of 14.5 million birds in the United States, which is just crazy. So what it actually works out to is, and obviously this is going to be a bit of loose science here, but this is an actual study. I'm taking this from Contextualizing Avian Morality in 2009, a study by Benjamin Sovacool, who found that wind farms and nuclear power stations are responsible for between 0.3 and 0.4 bird deaths per gigawatt hour, while fossil fuel power stations are responsible for about 5.2 fatalities per gigawatt hour, a far, far higher rate. So look, if you want to come away from this thinking, my God, every way we make power kills a lot of birds, I get that and you're right. But this is clearly better than what we have right now, and no mention of that is made by Louis Gohmert or the woman he was talking to.
There's a special category of like Newsmax host at this point. There's another video that's going around where they just cast who they think is a version of a Fox host. Mm-hmm. So you get Marjorie Taylor Greene on one of these in the last 24 hours, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Louis Gohmert, and a random like vax paranoiac who says that they're magnetized. And you have to see this person who's just like reading a script. Wait,
no emotion.
No emotion. Wait, no, they have to agree with the person on camera with them, but just like not expecting the thing that this Congress person, the kind of people that they wanted to interact with on a daily basis when they started pursuing a career in broadcast. Well, they're against the crazies of them. And they're like, I went to journalism school. Granted, all these skills would apply to a travel show, but I know how to read a prompter. Why is it this crazy?
Why am I talking about flamers?
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway, we are going to take our second break though, but stick around because when we get back, we're going to get into one of the most tragic stories of recent news. So we got that coming up for you after this. Okay, boy, some stories you just don't want to get into, but let's do it. By this point, you've almost certainly heard about the QAnon dad who killed his two kids. This is Matthew Taylor Coleman, charged just 2 days ago with foreign murder of US nationals in connection with the death of his 2-year-old son and his 10-month-old daughter, according to the US Attorney's Office for the Central District of California. Authorities said Coleman confessed to the killings and told the FBI that he used a spear phishing gun to stab them. And so look, no matter what other details come out of the story, it's just about as tragic as you can imagine a thing happening to a family, but the details that have come out do make it even worse against all odds. A criminal complaint alleges that he told the FBI that he killed his children because he believed they were, quote, going to grow into monsters. And that conspiracy theories led him to believe that his wife had passed down her serpent DNA to the children. Coleman's wife contacted Santa Barbara police after her husband had taken the kids out on Saturday, but didn't tell her where they were going. She got concerned eventually, and the police alerted the FBI. There was an investigation. He was later detained at the border where they found blood in the vehicle. And the complaint alleges that Coleman confessed to the killings upon being interviewed on Monday and gave authorities the location of the murder weapon and the discarded bloody clothing. He also identified two bodies recovered by Mexican authorities as those of his children. And he said that he knew what he was doing was wrong, but that, quote, it was the only course of action that would save the world. And of course, this has been spread quite a lot in the last few days, this story, as well as identifying him as being supporters of a variety of different conspiracy theories, including QAnon. Brett, what are your thoughts?
It's a soul-crushing story. You wonder if, I mean, yes. I like that you put the point the way you put it, like no matter what comes out, detail wise on this, this is a wildly tragic story. You wonder if without the QAnon aspect of it and the serpent, the thriving communities of conspiracy theory as a subculture, without that, would he have ever done this to this to his kids? You know, does he suffer from mental illness? Is it some kind of mental illness where regardless of where he would find it, there would still be some voice talking to him or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. But the truth is, like, I don't know. This is a sad story where a guy killed his kids with a spear gun. And I wonder how many people, and that's this, the crux of it. I want to say that is the crux of it. There is everything else is just like, I have the luxury of being able to sit here and be like, what else does it imply about society?
Sure.
And it's like, are there going to be people out there who are like, well, you know, everyone's jumping down this guy's throat, but he did the right thing. Are there people out there who do that? And you've got to say that there probably are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. It's one of the reasons we didn't initially do this story yesterday or whatever, because he almost certainly is out of his mind, whatever, like whatever term you want to use. The question, but as you allude to, so I don't know that, like, usually we have more of a paper trail of how they became radicalized. We don't have that here, at least right now. So I don't know to what extent, like, there are grifters and there are conspiracy theorists out there. And so if you're gonna have them bouncing around, and then you're gonna have, you know, a lot of people with mental health problems, because in America we barely talk about it, let alone actually deal with it. Eventually those things are gonna collide. If he collided with someone else instead, would he have not done this? I don't know. These are impossible things to guess, but it is terrible. I hate that we have so many people with so big of a followings encouraging people to believe this nonsense about lizard people and about, you know, underground pedophile cults and all that. But anyway, one point, you know, I think beyond mere speculation is that you might have noticed, as many did, that in this story being spread, the media did the thing that they do. Remember, this is a story about a father brutally murdering two of his kids. And as is pointed out here by a 30-year-old woman yells at Cloud on Twitter, the photo on the Washington Post and on many places was one of a variety of photos of him, like, on vacation, working out in the water. I don't know if that's supposed to make us think of the murder weapon, which seems like a very bizarre way to go with it. But as usual, no matter how brutal an individual murder or a mass act of violence a white male commits, they're gonna have these media figures basically doing PR, if unconsciously, in presenting them as these nice people. And that's parodied here with Zach Fox saying, this is how photos be looking in headlines where a white man kills his entire family. It's always something positive. You know, the victim of a crime being black, they hunt through their social media to find the most threatening looking image they can find. But anyway, this certainly did not break that pattern. Any final thoughts?
I mean, yes, that is one aspect of it, is the luxury that you have to be portrayed after the fact as like a happy family before this all went down, when other people would not be treated as well. And then also, like, through all this, actively pandering to QAnon adherents. You see Fox News and an entire political party that's doing that, that's pandering to this. And just, I feel terrible, but like just reminding them that this is at heart of what they're trying to get, that what they're actively pursuing as a voting block is QAnon adherents. And there are no two ways about it. There's tons of language that they use in marketing to people. Yeah. That's just from QAnon and these conspiracy theories.
Oh, terrible story. Okay, we are running very low on time, but we do want to do this last story with the time that we have remaining. So let's jump into this. Basically, every week there is an update in the legal situation for Britney Spears that has had a sort of renewal of focus from our country. Now, the father of Britney Spears, Jamie Spears, has apparently agreed to step down as her conservator, although there are some lingering questions. So, according to the father's court document, there are, in fact, let's take it with a grain of salt, there are, in fact, no actual grounds for suspending or removing Mr. Spears as the conservator of the estate. And it is highly debatable whether a change in conservator at this time would be in Mrs. Spears' best interest. So, supposedly going, but not without a few parting shots. Goes on to say, nevertheless, even as Mr. Spears is the unremitting target of unjustified attacks, he does not believe that a public battle with his daughter over his continuing service as her conservator would be in her best interests. So even though he must contest this unjustified petition for his removal, he intends to work with the court and his daughter's new attorney to prepare for an orderly transition to a new conservator. And so, like, it's, they're preparing, it's a process. We don't know what the timeline of that will be. And certainly isn't acknowledging any of what's been alleged, including by Britney Spears herself, but it does seem like we have some movement on this, Brett.
Yeah, so this is an interesting case where, like, I don't have any information on her mental issues that they all keep talking about, whether they exist or not. I know that I see videos, weird videos of her that she uploads where she's dancing, and I'm concerned. But at the end of the day, this is not my decision to make. I love everyone who thinks that they're going to step in and say, like, well, I think that her dad should stay the conservator. I think she should have another conservator. Like, what information do you need that would affect whether, like, I should be advocating for one policy or another? That said, like, it is just strange to me that she would still be under a conservatorship after this much time. When along the way during that conservatorship, she was performing and making millions and millions of dollars as an employee, essentially, of some kind of event group in Vegas, right? So if she's able to do those kinds of things, I just don't. And as JR pointed out in the morning meeting today, he's like, there's a lot of rich people who end up blowing it, and they're not all under conservatorship. And I think that's probably the most, the best argument that I've heard so far, besides, you know, the original person who shouted leave Britney alone.
You're allowed to go broke. You're allowed to do that. Like, I and the idea that this guy who has absolutely nothing to do with any of it, the fact that, like, his interest in the money remaining outweighs her interest in being free seems bizarre. And again, as we have to point out, he's still a conservator now, and it's looking like she's still going to have one. Yeah. Maybe it will be one that she'll be involved in choosing, but these are degrees of freedom that we're talking about now. So we'll see. Things are changing. They put out a statement from their attorney saying that they're, the ongoing shameful and reprehensible attacks, obviously they're disappointed by that. Yeah, I can imagine, considering the outpouring of support from the community combined with her testimony about what he has done. I might have thought you'd want to go out like with a little bit of dignity, but apparently not going in that direction.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is all the time that we have for this first hour. So for those of you watching on our linear platform, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.